Blog Talk Radio.
Local Turmoil fans, welcome to the show here on another Sunday afternoon. Some show notes real quick before we jump into things. If you're looking for some wrestling today, you can find it in Portland, Oregon at Blue Collar Wrestling, like every Sunday. Also, if you're in Hickory, North Carolina, you can see Casey Carlisle, whom I love, attempt to regain her NWA World Women's title. That is for the AEL. Without further ado, I want to welcome our guest back to the show. It's been way too long since we've had him on here. John Bullard, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. It's always an honor to be on Turnbuckle Turmoil, best radio show on Blog Talk Radio, and honestly, my favorite wrestling podcast show.
We definitely appreciate that. Now, since you were on last, lots have been going on with you. One of the main things that is happening with you is you're a number one contender to the World Underground Wrestling America world title. It's currently held by one of our locals, Ron Von Hess. What's been the process getting to number one contendership and then trying to get a match with Ron Von Hess?
You know, I was kind of surprised that I actually became one of the number one contenders. I've been wrestling for one of our local regional promotions here. I live in northwestern Indiana, Chicagoland area, company called Ileana Pro Wrestling, IPW. And me and Von Hess have known each other for a long time. To me, it's a humbling experience when someone wants to say, hey, you know, I want to give it to guys that have been overlooked or guys that haven't been, had a chance to be showcased. And to me, it was something big, because the way I look at it is that me and him has kind of a weird parallel universe with each other. I know when a lot of people think about Ron Von Hess, and they remember the Tokyo Monster Cahagas match he had. And a lot of people wrote him off as someone that wasn't that good of a wrestler. And here was a guy that took that. He took the worst possible thing that could have been thrown on him. And he trained. And he worked hard. And he actually prevailed. And people who don't give him credit really are overlooking him. And the guy worked hard to be where he's at now. So with my story and his, the way it's kind of parallel, you know, I've been involved in the wrestling business, as you know, for forever almost, and people always saw me as just that promoter guy. You know, a very successful promoter when I ran Pro Wrestling Freedom out of Kentucky, and the way we changed the way that pro wrestling was looked at the state itself. But I was more than just a guy who was a promoter. I've been in the business as a referee, as a pro wrestler, manager. I've done everything. And so when I came back to wrestling, which is probably one of the questions I ask why, because I retired in 2014. And when I came back, the goal in mind was one, I wanted to get back in great shape. I wanted to get my health back on the right track. So I trained really extremely hard. I still train extremely hard every single day. And I became somebody that the company I work for now, IPW, has a lot of respect, a lot of stock into. And so I myself had a lot to prove, not only to people, but prove to myself. And to get this opportunity with Von Hess, that's a dream come true. Definitely the World Underground Wrestling title, which has been, you know, came from Japan. defended in Europe, has been defended in other countries. It's a legitimate world title. A lot of people want to talk about, you know, the NWA world title being a legitimate world title, or the WWE title being a legitimate one. Well, here's a belt that's also a legitimate world title that has been defended in different countries against all types of top-class talent. To get that opportunity is something that I've been looking forward to. I've been trying to contact promoters in Illinois and Indiana about booking this match. Unfortunately, a lot of them just don't have it in their budget. So I do ask people like Von Hess or anybody else, if you want me to come there to the Washington area, I will. And I will give him the best match he's ever had, because I have something to prove. And not only to prove to him or prove to the wrestling fans, but prove to myself. And I know that we can have a great match.
Now, you mentioned the Tokyo Cahagas match. I've been in a number of Von Hess versus Tokyo Monster Cahagas matches in my day. I believe good four of them at minimum. He seems to improve each time out against the Tokyo Monster Cahagas. Like you said, he's evolved, he's learned, he's gone and sought out different training, started almost from scratch. Like yourself,
yeah, I mean,
he is promoted, he has wrestled, he's done a little of everything. Do you feel like you and Von Hess maybe not only might make great opponents, but somewhere down the road, maybe great teammates?
You know, that would be a really amazing opportunity. I think him, we have both have something similar. We both use the Iron Claw as a finisher. I always use that finisher as a tribute to the Von Erichs. As a kid growing up, I was a huge world-class wrestling fan. Of course, Von Hess uses the Iron Claw because who his father was. And so it's one of those things that, you know, we both use the Iron Claw. We're both real, you know, pretty good-sized guys. We both got tattoos. You know, it kind of paralleled each other in a way. Yeah, it's a strange to think that, but we do, yes. And, you know, it's one of those things that I would really look forward to this. I really will. As a match, I think that all the opponents that he's had since he became champion, he's wrestled some of the absolute best talent in the Pacific Northwest. Well, it's time for him to have somebody from the Midwest to come and challenge him for that belt and give him a match that I know that we can have those fans at the edge of the seat. Because if there's anything about myself, I'm an underdog story. I shouldn't be where I'm at in life. But I scraped and I fought for every inch of things I've had, every opportunity I've ever had, I've earned it. You know, I never politicked anybody. I've never begged for anything. I've always worked twice as hard as the next guy to get to where I'm at. And the way I look at it is, it's just one of those things that it's not one of those things that other guys they'll say to themselves that, you know, they deserve it. It's one of those things that I need. It's one of those things that if it is coming close to the end of my wrestling career, it's one of those moments that I can look back at and say, you know what, I've earned the spot to be there and wrestling against a guy who himself has earned the spot where he's at. Can we give his fans one hell of a match?
I would love seeing you up here for sure. It's been way too long since we crossed paths, so I'm all for you coming up to Bremerton and challenging Von Hess on his home turf. And as an impartial party, I would just like to point out, watch your eyes. He likes to go for the eyes.
Yeah, I've noticed that. He likes the eye rakes, the eye poke, and he's a big fan of his chops, and so am I. So it's like I said, we'll have a lot of fun. A lot of brutal fun and painful, but it'd be fun nonetheless.
Absolutely. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is, as a promoter and as a wrestler, I'm sure you've seen the influx in the last few years of lucha-based wrestling. We see a a lot of it up here in the Northwest now. There's a few lucha-specific promotions in Washington and Oregon. We see a lot more lucha-style trainees, people that studied specifically for lucha wrestling. In your area where you wrestle, do you see a lot of the lucha influence, and is it a style that you think is good for your area?
Yeah, we actually, the Chicagoland area has two very prominent promotions in Lucha Libre. We have Galia Lucha Libre that has produced a lot of really good talent that comes through. There's actually a few of the guys now wrestling on Major League Wrestling on television. Gringo Loco is one of them. He's a phenomenal talent and a good friend himself. Skyda Jr., all those guys are in that promotion. And then we have another promotion called Lucha Libre Total, LLT Lucha Libre. And they have a really good show. They run shows out of the Berwyn Eagles Club. And they always bring in guys from CMLL and I think sometimes once in Blue Moon, some guys from AAA. And, yeah, it works. To me, when I was promoting shows, and I would always try to book every match to be a little different. And to me, I always learned that pro wrestling is kind of like your fans are the type of people that they like different flavor of ice cream. So if you're running a show, it's always best, in my opinion, to give fans a little different flavor every show. If you do everything old school, every match is constantly old school, then that's great if you have a crowd that enjoys that. Problem is, not every crowd understands the concept anymore, so you have to give them something a little diverse. So throw in a little bit of Lucha Libre. Throw in, old school American style wrestling. Throw in some wrestling that's like British style, very technical. The Japanese strong style is great if you have guys that actually work that style, understand the concept of a strong style. I think that every wrestling style has its niche market. In some areas, that niche market works really well. In some areas, not too much. But that's just based on the knowledge of your fans. Not everyone will understand Lucha Libre. But if you have a very strong Latino area, demographic-wise, it'll very much be successful if promoted correctly with good talent.
Since you promoted wrestling very successfully with the PWF, you have a bit of a different grasp on things than a lot of wrestlers do. You understand not everything is black and white as far as putting a show together, bringing in talent, that type of thing. As a wrestler now, do you find promoters coming to you for advice on what they should or shouldn't be doing with their shows, who they should or shouldn't be considering, and that sort of thing, since you have a unique perspective on it?
I actually have had people come to me for advice. I had a couple of guys who were actually about to start up a promotion in the Tennessee-Kentucky area that has asked me to become like a liaison with them on running their shows properly. To me, I do kind of look at it a little differently. When you're a pro wrestler, again, and you're looking at how people do business, sometimes it's one of those things that you see young promoters making mistakes that even myself I made, because, you know, here's the thing about being a promoter. No one's not perfect. Everyone's going to have a great show if they do it properly, and sometimes you'll have a bump in the road and you'll make mistakes financially or maybe you didn't book the right guy for the show and it didn't get over well. It really depends on how much effort you put into your product that makes it successful. To me, I look at it when I tell people and they're planning to run a show, is that you want to first look at the area that you're running. Understand your demographic. Understand if the area that you're in, let's say, for example, you're in, I'll use this for example. When I was in Kentucky, when we started running PWF, we had an area in southern Kentucky that was predominantly ran like it was Memphis, Tennessee. And a lot of the fans that were coming to shows were no longer part of that Memphis, Tennessee style wrestling age group. You know, a lot of younger kids didn't know who Tommy Rich was, or, they only remember Jerry Lawler as Jerry Lawler commentator, not Jerry Lawler, the King of Memphis Wrestling. So we had to produce a different style show that would grab people's attention because everybody in that area was still trying to do 1970 style wrestling. Nothing wrong with that. I'm a huge traditionalist. Love traditional style wrestling. I love a good story. But we had to produce something that was a little different, and I took a lot of the ideas off the page book of Gary Hart, who would forever be known as one of the greatest managers in wrestling, but he's also one of the greatest minds for wrestling. He was the head booker for World Class Championship Wrestling in his prime. And Gary always said that if you're going to have a promotion that's going to be successful, you can't rely on the same old guys that everyone has seen. So when I looked at Kentucky when we started, I didn't want to use the same local wrestlers that everyone has seen every show for every other promotion. So we started booking guys from Georgia. We booked guys from the Carolinas. We booked guys from Ohio. Hell, we even had you come on all the way from Washington area when you came to referee for us. And we had all these different talents coming in, and the fans loved it because it was a fresh product that was different. We didn't mock their intelligence, and we gave them a product that they could be so proud to say, you know, that's our home promotion. And we were successful for doing that. And now I look at Kentucky, and I never try to brag about myself, but I do see myself as the guy that did change the way the promoters in the state of Kentucky do run shows. Because beforehand, I was laughed at because I was using all these younger talents. And people were saying, well, you know, young guys will never get over. And you've seen our shows. We had huge crowds, and it was very successful. And the other promotions started then seeing, okay, so he's not using the same old guard, he's using the younger talent. The younger talent helped us out, and now a lot of those guys are now getting bookings in companies like GCW. We have a couple of PWF alumni that's now wrestling for WWE. We have people who have worked for a lot of the top indie promotions in the country, and now some of our guys are getting international bookings in Japan and other countries as well. And it works. A young market, good young talent, will always be successful if the right booker and right promoter is behind them. If you're a promoter and you don't go out and you don't advertise, if you're not putting up flyers, if you're not going on radio shows, if you're not going on doing TV commercials or whatever you put your money into, if you're not doing that, you'll never have that successful fan base. Because it's not filled with dreams. You can't just say, well, I'll just put a wrestling ring in the middle of a field and someone's going to show up and see it. You have to advertise. And the problem with most promoters I encounter, and that's including in Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, and so forth, a lot of the promoters don't want to promote. A lot of them want to run shows for their friends. They want to put the belts on their buddies. They don't want to promote the proper guys that should get them over because they can actually cut a good promo. Or they're good in-ring talent. A lot of these people want to just play wrestler or want to play promoter, but they don't want to really be a businessman. When I started PWF as a promoter, I took more of a business standpoint. I wanted to make money with being a promoter. I didn't want to be a hobbyist with it because what's the point of being a hobbyist if you're going to lose all your money?
Very, very true. Now, when I did make it out to PWF, I came across tons and tons of great talent. It was a stacked show. One of my very favorite places I ever got to perform, honestly. One of the people on that show, like you mentioned, has gone on to Japan. He is currently with Evolve and Dragon Gate. He's been up in our area. He's wrestling Mexico. I'm talking about the Gift, Jason Kincaid. You had him early on in his career, and he was already absolutely incredible, but what has it been like watching his progression and seeing him as he not only has done great things on the independents, but on national levels, including Ring of Honor's national television?
Well, you know what? It couldn't happen to a better guy. Humble, hardworking, always showed up on time, never had drama. Never politicked anybody. He was a blessing to work with and one of the guys that I'm very proud of. I'm very proud of everybody who did work for me because so many of them worked hard. And, you know, I don't really have the chance to talk to a lot of people who used to work for me, but I always look at them and their success, and I'm proud of my one of my favorite all-time matches we've ever promoted. And it was by mistake, by the way. That was our second show. It was supposed to be Shane Mercer, who has gone on to some great things himself. He's going to be a household name in a matter of 2-3 years. Shane Mercer was supposed to team up with Jared Sloan to take on Jason Kincaid and Cole Leighton King. And Jared Sloan couldn't make the show. So we were still planning to push Shane Mercer as his upstart babyface. And so we had this match then turn into Jason Kincaid versus Shane Mercer. And it stole the show. It wasn't supposed to be the match that stole the show, and I know both of them were killer at what they did in ring. But it was one of those matches when it was done, standing ovation. And it made Shane Mercer over as a babyface and made Jason Kincaid over as a heel in the same night. And that's great when you have a match that both people get over by their work rate alone. And the fans appreciated that. That's one thing I love about the PWF fans. They actually appreciated good wrestling. And that was one of those matches I watched. It was like, wow. Another match he had was Kyle Matthews, who's a guy who's now retired, and it's a shame because Kyle Matthews, in my opinion, was the best unsigned independent wrestling talent in the country. He was so good. He had matches with Brian Danielson, matches against Davey Richards, Fred Ehi, all these guys. And to me, watching Kyle become one of those locker room leader types was just a blessing to watch. He never gave us a bad match. The Primus tournament. You know, he had three matches in that tournament when he won the championship. He was our first champion. And I think every match was almost like 20, 25 minutes apiece with him. So, like, talking about cardio and just being a wrestler's wrestler, you know, him and Jason Kincaid, Jordan Cage, Dustin Reyes, I can go on a whole list of those guys who worked for me. They were all phenomenal talent. And to see Jason get his dreams come true by being booked now in Japan, I know he's working a lot with DDT, and just to watch him evolve as a performer and also evolve as a human being with his Buddhist mentality that he has, he's very humble, he's very happy with the simple things in life. I think outside of just being a wrestler, a lot of people learn how to live life just by his example.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by. I'm sure he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to QT for a bit.
All right, QT, how you doing, buddy?
Well, thanks. Hello, John. I'm doing pretty good. I myself attended a wrestling event with Sign Guy yesterday in a high school gymnasium. Yes.
Oh, how was the show?
It was good. Oh, it was fantastic. It was huge. Very good action, including a very good ladies' match. Speaking of which, how is
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, sir.
How's speaking of which, well, we had Sunny Days going up against Sarah Irene yesterday. How's your female talent out there?
Well, we've actually got some pretty good women wrestlers. Of course, in the Chicago area, we have the Shimmer promotion, which is internationally well known. So, yeah, Chicago has a hotbed of really good Chicago talent. I think this girl named Kylie Ray, who's now working for All Elite Wrestling, she's a Chicago girl. So there's this whole area has so much talent. Like, it's so funny when I see, like, people say that there's a lot of bad promotions in Chicago, because the way I look at it is we have so much great talent in, like, the tri-state region around us with Indiana, Michigan, Chicago, or, well, I should say Illinois area. It's almost impossible to book a bad show if you actually look for good talent. So, yeah, you can't really find anyone truly bad because you just turn around and there's another great talent right behind you. So it's a lot of good women talent and also a lot of good male talent too.
Yes, they also had Billy Corrigan of the Smashing Pumpkins get into wrestling in the Chicago area.
Yeah, he started out with the Resistance promotion when they were first running. And I don't really know too much about all that because at that time I was about out of the business when I was all starting up. But, yeah, he's done pretty well himself now as being the new owner of the National Wrestling Alliance. A lot of people first thought maybe it wasn't going to work out for, you know, with him running it. But honestly, I think he's done a good job. And I'm just kind of curious to see where it will go.
Yes, they also, in the Chicago area, they shot the Blues Brothers movie. And the the Blues Brothers, Cook County Jail was mentioned in that movie. Yes.
In the area that we actually live in, there's actually a few of the scenes in that movie was actually filmed where me and my wife actually drive past every day.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Have you yourself ever been to the Cook County Assessor's Office?
I try to avoid that place as much as possible.
So,
no, I have not, but it's one of the things that I might actually this summer kind of take like a little Blues Brothers type tour and take photographs of a lot of the areas of the scenes of the film was actually filmed at, just for Memento. So, I always loved that movie.
One can only wonder if that mall is still there where they drove their cop car in, the mall.
Actually, that mall is actually still there.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Ooh, it's, all right.
Oh, okay. Actually, I was correcting my wife. Something that mall was actually demolished last year. They actually tore it down. I thought it was still around. So I was correcting one way and incorrecting the other. It was still around, but last year... Yeah, the parking lot's still there. But unfortunately, yeah, they tore that down. So, yeah, that's part of history that's sadly now gone, yes.
Oh, wow. Do you know offhand, and I know this isn't a wrestling topic, if Dan Aykroyd was there at the start of the demolition?
You know what? That's a good question. I know he's very involved with the Chicago scene for films and also music, up to blues music. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was.
Wow.
Well,
okay.
Gentlemen, we have another caller on the line, perhaps with a question, so let's bring them on real quick. We have the caller from the Alaska area code.
Is this John Bullard?
Yes, John.
This is Jerry Bishop. How are you doing, my friend? I just wanted to give you a call into the show, say I'm happy that you're back in the business and you're tearing it up. One of my best friends. You're a hell of a guy, and I'm glad to see you doing your thing. And with all due respect to Ron Von Hess, you're going to put that claw on him, and you're going to be the new UW champion.
I appreciate that, man. So good to hear your voice after so long, Jerry. Yeah, Jerry Bishop.
Been too long, man.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Yeah, Jerry's one of the best wrestlers. In my opinion, probably one of the best. If I had to say this, Jerry, it is a God honest truth, man. He came to work for me, and this way I feel about Kentucky, Ohio area. He was one of those guys that was under the radar to the point that it should have been a federal crime. And I mean, you're just one of those guys. I'm so glad to see that you're doing well in Alaska, man. Really, really proud of you, man.
Thank you, sir. Hey, man, this business, it's a small world. Our paths are going to cross again, and I will see you shortly. I just wanted to call in and I don't mean to hijack your show. I just wanted to call in and, you know, say what's up to you and the guys at Turnbuckle Turmoil. I'm sitting here with Freya the Slayer. We got a show in a couple months. I'm not here to plug my stuff. I'm here to put you over, though. So, man, you're a great dude, and I'm glad you're back in this, man. Wish nothing but the best for you.
All right. Give me a call sometime.
Take care, man. Will do. Will do, man. All right. Later.
Oh, that was a nice phone call, yes. Okay, very good. Well, John,
yeah, Jerry was one of those guys that worked with us at PWF. Like I said, he was criminally underrated, how good of a wrestler he is.
Wow, okay. Well, about what size does he go? About what size was the caller that just called? Is he a true heavyweight or super heavyweight?
Jerry is, if I'm right, he's about 6'3", 6'4". So he's a good-sized guy. And my opinion, like, here's a person that you take the work rate of someone that understands how to be a babyface in a world that so many guys nowadays don't know how to be one. He's probably one of the truest babyfaces out there. I compare him to me. He's like Alaska's Ricky Morton. That's the best way I can put it, because he understands the key of what it takes to be a good babyface. And the true thing is, he's one of the realest, true, nicest guys you could ever encounter. So he's the real deal.
Wow, very good. Okay. All right. Well, John, can you tell us what the first match, where it was, and what the first match was when your parents attended, and what your parents' reaction was?
Are you talking about like my first match, or are you talking about the first match like I ever seen as a kid?
No, the first match that your parents attended. Yes.
There was one show, the first one that my father always told me when he was living in California, when he was in the service back in the 1940s, when he got out of the World War II, he actually lived in Los Angeles. And he actually told me that he remembered going to the auditorium, seeing Gorgeous George. You know, it was really, to most people, the first real professional villain in wrestling, and the first real true showman. And that was my dad's first real encounter of professional wrestling, and he always talked about that. Every time we watched wrestling, he was like, and I always remembered going to the auditorium and seeing him, and how the spotlight would be on him and the music would play. And this is back then when no one had music, so it was like really like a huge show. And he was going out, he was tossing his body pins out, and he had the butler with him that was doing the body fragrance spray for, you know, Rick Martel and other people who were doing that. And, you know, it was a really, you know, amazing show. The first one that me and my father ever went to was when I was in middle school. We went to a local independent wrestling show, and we had a great time with that. I remember Manny Fernandez was on that card. And it was a blast. It was good memories. You know, I miss my parents. I lost both my parents, you know, not too long ago. I lost my dad back in 2010, my mom back in January. And it was one of those, wrestling was one of those bonding moments. You know, everybody, you know, we enjoyed it. It was one of those things that, you know, when wrestling was on, it was never a bad day at the house.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, speaking of music and coming to the ring with music, we had a wrestler last night come to the music accompanied by a high school marching band. Yes.
So I love stuff like that. And it's me that's being a showman. That's one of the things that's missing in wrestling today. When people do stuff like that, it stands out, because it doesn't matter that wrestler is the greatest in-ring performer. It's a lot of times the pageantry and the performance of the character that will stand out far more than someone who could do a 450 or a moonsault. And I've always liked characters more than I did, you know, fancy moves. So, I mean, kudos to that person for going out to the marching band. That's great.
Yes, they were very good. In fact, part of the receipts, the gate receipts for this event that both Sign Guy and I went to the marching band. They had a raffle for the marching band.
Good.
Very good. Okay. Yes. All right.
That's great, because, you know, music in school, that's one of those programs that needs to be supported the most. You know, the arts and music is one of those things that I remember when I was a kid going to school, that's what actually kept me away from getting in trouble. You know, I was a band geek myself, and I enjoyed playing music and still do, actually. I'm actually currently working on some songs myself to start using for some upcoming projects for hitrecord.org, which is Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the movie actor. I do voiceover work for his company, and also we're going to be doing compositions of music. I'm looking forward to that. So, I look back at what school did for me with music programs and very grateful for it. And it's good to see that there's wrestling shows that are doing raffles and benefits to help out the music programs as well. That's something that every school needs.
Yes, I noticed on your Facebook page that one of your favorite guitarists is a guitarist. I think his name is Estes Tone.
Yes. if anybody has not seen him, they need to. He's probably the most complete guitar player I've ever seen.
Now, are there any truths to the rumors that his song, The Song of the Golden Dragon, was dedicated to Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
That I'm not sure. He's actually very interesting. He's a very interesting story, though. He was born in the Ukraine. His parents were German and Jewish descendants, and by the time he started playing guitar when he was about 6 years old, they moved to Israel. And he still played music by the time, you know, when he was still a young kid, but then he started serving in the military. And I guess being involved in warfare and violence really bothered him because that's not who he was. So he stopped playing music for over 10 years, whole decade, never touched a guitar. And he finally decides to come to the United States. Comes to the United States, he decides that the life that he wants is not of military or violence, but it is a life of giving, sharing, and playing music as his passion. So he picks up his guitar and he just starts playing. And like I said, you listen to him play. It's like, my God, this guy's a flawless guitar player. Like, he has rhythm and lead and percussion. And he sounds like a complete entire band, but there's only one man in his guitar. And yeah, it's a he's an amazing player. I'm a huge fan of classical guitar music. And him and Andre Segovia and all those type of musicians, huge fan of.
Wow, classical guitar playing. Very good. Okay. Huh. Okay. Well, John, as a promoter, have you given any kids a chance to be an honorary bell ringer?
We've had some young people that we did stuff like that for. I've always tried to do my best to give people a chance to get their hands involved in the business. Definitely there are young people that I know that respects the wrestling business. Unfortunately, with the state of Kentucky, it's one of those very strict type of states that, you know, we have an athletic commission. So you had to be at a certain age to be more involved with wrestling. But we've, you know, helped out a lot of people. We had a young lad that was involved with us. Sadly, he passed away. His name is Jeffrey Carter. Always out the world with him and still do with his family. Jeff went to the shows. He helped set up the ring for us. He was always there to help out. And later on, he became a great photographer in wrestling. So he's one of those kids that I looked at and was very proud of because he pursued his dream.
Wow, very good. All right. Very nice. Okay. Well, John, what was the first Halloween card that you participated in? And were you or any of the other wrestlers involved in a casket match?
You know, I've never had the chance to be really involved in a Halloween-type show. It's just so weird to think that because all the years I've been on it, and I've never had one. I have been on shows before involved a not really a casket match, but a body bag match, UWF in Georgetown, Kentucky, J.R. Rock versus the Zodiac. They had a body bag match. It was actually really good. Both of those guys are great performers in ring, and that match was, like, really good. You know, it's one of those things that you just don't really see a casket match done often. But if it's done properly, it's really good.
Yes. Yeah, they are good. Uh-huh. They're very good. All right. Well, John, have you ever crossed paths with a wrestler from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, Chief Attacula, one half of the World Powers and partner of the Yemeni assassin Defola Dabashi?
Me and Chief have known each other for a long time. Really good veteran. His reputation alone has, you know, surpassed a lot of folks. He's extremely good. I've never had the chance to meet him in person, though. That's a shame. It's one of those weird things, like, you've known someone for so long, but you just never had a chance to cross paths with him. I've actually had a match not too long ago against one of his arch rivals and also sometimes fellow tag partner, the Wild Man Beast. We actually had a match, probably about 2 months ago in Cedar Lake, Indiana. And that was a really good matchup. The Wild Man Beast is a great performer. He kind of reminds a lot of people of Abdullah the Butcher. But he's one of those guys that if you overlook him, you're really missing out on a good talent. But yeah, him and Chief's one of my favorite guys.
And he has that bright colored mohawk.
Yeah, it's something that you can spot a mile away when you see it in the crowd. How many guys you see at his size of a pink mohawk? You know, it stands out. It works for him. You know, he pulls it off.
Will, when you were manager, did you manage any wrestlers in the mode of Jimmy Wang Yang or Eric Young? And would Shane Mercer fit these personalities?
No, I haven't. When I was managing, and there was only two guys that managed mainly, J.R. Rock. Of course, I wrestled as Johnny Rock back in the days, back in 2009 to 2011 year. Me and J.R. worked really well. We were the Rock Brothers, and we caused a lot of riots. That was fun, until when people started pulling knives on you and stuff. But, we had fun. Managed him, managed the Zodiac, managed the other people too, like Chucky Smooth, with the other people when I was working with Georgetown. Shane Mercer is nowhere near none of those other two guys. Shane's his own person. And I think that's why he's going to be so successful, because he doesn't try to be anyone else. He is himself. He is a guy that you look at him, he's a walking, talking, breathing wrestling machine. And here's a guy that can lift like hundreds of pounds, crazy deadlifts, crazy bench press records. The guy, for love of God, was on Sports Illustrated for lifting an entire bench that fans were sitting on and used it as a weapon. Like a pair of bleachers that he lifted up, then lifted a bleacher and used it as a weapon. So, yeah, he is his own person, and that is what's going to make him successful. Is that he is himself. And that's no gimmick. That's just him being him.
He let me get this straight. He lifted a set of bleachers with some fans on them?
The fans got off the bleachers. It was for a resistance show in Chicago area. And he just picked up these huge bleachers. And it was him, and I can't remember who he's teamed up with, but it was against the Gymnastic Boys. And he used the bleachers as a weapon. And it got so downloaded by people on the internet that Sports Illustrated actually covered that event with him lifting up those bleachers just because of that alone. Because it's not something you see every day that, you know, it's almost like the Incredible Hulk from the comic books. You know, you see Hulk pick up a skyscraper building or some huge, you know, furniture and smack someone with it. And here's a guy in real life, like the Incredible Hulk, that lifts up, you know, a huge bleacher and hit someone with it. So, yeah, it was quite amazing to see that. Freak of strength that kid has. He's amazing.
Wow. And I thought I was doing good yesterday when I picked up a broomstick with two angel food cakes attached to each end. Damn. I'll have to up my strength training, I guess. Okay. Holy smokes. All right. Well, John, as a wrestler, especially when you were starting out, how much merchandise did you sell on a good night, like T-shirts, when you were starting out?
When I first started out doing the Johnny Rock persona, I had a whole bunch of T-shirts printed out. They're really nice. I actually still have one or two of them still available, which I'm kind of amazed because – I thought like I was completely out of all those shirts, and I stumbled across this box when we all moved up north, and I was like, wow, there's one shirt still left. And the very first night in Georgetown, I set that shirts out, and I was the only heel that was actually had merchandise. And it was kind of funny because one of the guys on the show, he kind of didn't like me for some reason. I don't know why. I was always polite towards him, but he was like, you know, you're a heel, so you'll never sell any merchandise. I had about 15 T-shirts on that table. Time the night was over with, all 15 of the shirts were gone. And we're selling them about $20 a piece. So did pretty well. Merchandise-wise, I've always been a firm believer, if you're going to have T-shirts, you want to make them look unique. Use good color schemes. You know, everyone likes to wear just, you know, black and white shirt or whatever. And use colors. Make it be something that people would want to wear. For me, I always try to go with my T-shirts look like a rock and roll band type logo or a heavy metal type shirt that people would want to wear. And it sells. It really does. It works. And so, yeah, merchandising pretty well. A lot of times, though, definitely in the Deep South and Mid-South, a lot of companies don't want their villains to have merchandise. Now wrestling is such a different world because everybody has merchandise and they don't care and they'll sell it. But during that time, I was one of the rare exceptions of being a heel that actually had his own merchandise table and they had my own fan club that would come to shows. So it worked out for my own behalf. But sometimes I ran against some companies and some promoters that didn't want that to happen.
Wow. Okay. Well, John, have you ever heard a fan scream at a referee, "Someone set a trap. I smell a rat." Have you ever had a fan say that?
I've heard that before. I've seen one of the funnier stories about fan interactions. There's a couple stories I have, if we have time. There's something I want to talk about as well before we go off air that is really important to speak about. But we were at this one show in Georgetown, Kentucky, and there used to be this guy who used to come to the show. He looked like an old, like, hobo. His name was Charlie. And he would always sit there in the front row. And no matter what I did, I could walk past him and not say one word. This guy would want to punch me in the face or throw stuff at me. So one night, we were wrestling. It was me, Scott D. Ray, Justin Grunge, who's both those guys, I believe, are out of the business now for good. We took on Jared Sloan and Tommy Green. And Tommy Green's been wrestling ever since the ICW days in Kentucky back in the 1970s and 80s. So Tommy is rolled outside, and I'm choking him with a belt. And next thing I know, old Charlie is, like, climbing over this table. Because in Georgetown, we didn't have guardrails. We actually had, you know, tables that you'd use. Because it was a bingo hall that we ran the shows out of. He was coming over the table, and he had a glass bottle in his hand. And he was about to bop me with it. And I have a photo of this, because it's kind of comical. Because he's come across the table, and all of a sudden, you see the security guard running. And he makes the Superman type dive save to get the bottle out of his hand before he whacked me back to the head with it. If we had that happen, I've had an Elvis impersonator threaten to kill me at shows because I wore a jumpsuit one time to the ring, and this guy just went belligerent crazy. That itself could be a podcast all alone because it's like an hour-long story, but it's so funny with all the stuff that happened. I might have to come back on the show and actually talk about that. Yeah, all types of stuff. We had a riot in Harlan, Kentucky one time for an independent pro company that Jamie Northstar's father ran. And there was a woman in this crowd that, you know, every night when we worked at a company, we would, you know, pick on her because she was an easy fan to get riled up, and she, of course, wanted to get riled up. And one night, one of the kids that was teaming up with me, he did the John Cena "You Can't See Me" to her son, and that set them off. And next thing you know, her husband and about 45 family members in Harlan, Kentucky gets up, and they knock over the guardrail, and they're coming to fight, and every wrestler in that locker room had to clear out, and it turns to a full-fledged brawl. And so troopers got called, the armory guys had to break it up, and this was actually all for a benefit show for the Mountain Warriors, those serving our country in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so for a charity show, we caused a full-fledged riot. And that was an interesting night.
Wow, that's a – holy smoke, riots, that's taken it to the extreme. Now, I remember in the early, well, when I first started seeing wrestling on TV, it was in the 70s with Portland Wrestling, and there was always this one lady who was in the front row, an older lady, and she always liked to heckle Buddy Rose. And one day, Buddy Rose was jawing back at her, and she took her umbrella and shook it at Buddy Rose, and Buddy Rose acted horrified, and he went and hid behind referee Sandy Barr.
Yeah, Buddy Rose was a classic villain in wrestling. Yeah, he was great.
Yes. That, I always remember that lady with the umbrella as a fan. Every week she was in the same seat on TV. That was interesting. Yes. Okay. Wow. Well, John, you said you were into brutal fun. This year I went to an event where the wrestlers ended up landing on tiny rubber ducks. Have you yourself ever landed in the ring on rubber ducks during a match?
No, never have done that. No, sir.
Oh, okay.
I've landed on midget wrestlers. I've landed on women. I've landed on people in the crowd, but never landed on rubber ducks.
Wow. Well, it was one of those wrestlers bring weapons match, but unfortunately, somehow they characterize tiny rubber ducks as a weapon. Yes. Okay. I don't. Well, John, you have a nice beard and a mustache. There is a wrestler out here named Mikey the Mustache Selleck who claims he has the best mustache in the business. Have you heard of this Pacific Northwest wrestler, Mikey the Mustache Selleck?
I actually have seen some videos of his work. He's actually a good talent. Yeah, he's got a pretty good mustache. I can't knock him for it. He's definitely got a pretty good grooming etiquette.
Yeah, I just don't know about that valet manager he's with, Polychromatic. She's kind of scary. Yes, very scary, Polychromatic. She looks, last night, she was wearing what appeared to be one of those jackets that the Beatles wore on the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album cover. One of those jackets, Nehru jackets. Yes. Yes, it was slightly disturbing. Slightly, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a sight to see, absolutely.
Yes. All right. Well, John, it was good talking with you. I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. It was good talking to you.
Thank you, QT. Well, John, we're down to the last several minutes of the show, and I want to make sure you have plenty of time. If there is anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you would like, upcoming appearances, merchandise, social medias, your favorite seafood restaurant, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
I appreciate that. You know, first and foremost, I want to thank you guys for always just being a great host, for having me on your show over the years. It's always been an honor. Anytime I get the opportunity to talk to both of you gentlemen. I do have a very important announcement. First, if anybody wants to hit me up, I'm, of course, on Facebook as John Bullard. A lot of people will find me as John Wolfstorm, but John Bullard is the way you look me up. I'm on Sign Guy's Facebook friends list. Hit me up, definitely. I'm also on Instagram as John Wolfstorm. My Instagram account is mainly my workout videos that I post. I'm a big firm supporter in using mace bells, Indian clubs, and also Persian mills for my workouts. It's the old school wrestler's workouts. It has helped me trim down over 100 pounds of weight that I've lost and turned into muscle the natural way, no steroids, no antibiotics. This is the old-fashioned way of just putting in blood, sweat, and tears. Two companies that I do endorse, MF Refab, Mike Furness, the owner of the company, has made a lot of my mace bells I swing and also my battle axes that I use in workouts. And another one is HeroicSports.com, the Paul Handles, which are great for Indian club workouts if you want to help rebuild your shoulder. If anybody has shoulder injuries, highly suggest going to them. It's a great way to rehab it. And I'm also a teacher on these workouts as well, too. So if someone wants to get in shape, or if it's a wrestling promotion that wants me to bring some of my stuff with me, and I could do a seminar on strength training from the old school ways of the Indian and also Iranian wrestlers. That's a specialty of mine. I'd be glad to do that for them. And a lot of these things I actually don't try to charge money with, because it's something that has helped me in my life and made me a stronger and healthier person. So I try to do the same to help pass that to someone else and help them with theirs as well. Also, want to thank so many people in my life. My wife, Corey, and her board. She's always been the strongest supporter of mine. She's always been in my corner. Wes Garlick, the guy who actually helped me turn my health around. You know, I'm not trying to take up too much time, guys, but, you know, I was at one time nearly 400 pounds, and I was on the verge of death. And this guy helped get me on the right track, get my health back in balance. And, you know, huge thanks for him for lighting that fire under me. Bobby Blade and all those other guys that has worked with me over the years, anybody who's worked with me in PWF and also has ever shared a locker room with me in wrestling, thank you. One of the most important announcements I have to make, that this is actually my final year in professional wrestling. After December of 2019, after being in the business for so long, I'm officially going to be retired. But the reason why I am retiring has nothing to do with being burnt out on wrestling or just trying to be out of wrestling altogether. It's some new business ventures that are coming into my life that I want to do. I want to focus more on being a mentor and also being more involved as a physical trainer for people. I want to help change people's lives, make people know that, you know, no matter how hard you have it, you can get back up and you can take control of your health and do something really great with it. Also, I got so many deals with doing voice acting for people, definitely with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's Hit Record Company. We're going to be working on some stuff pretty soon that will be on Netflix that I'm really looking forward to as well. So there's a lot of the business ventures that I'm excited for. And I love the wrestling business, and it's not, you know, me giving up on the business or saying that it's over with for good, but it's one of those things that I want to leave the business in a better place before I started and to do as much as I can to help out any of the younger people that needs advice. And I'll still be around for advice for others and to be available to help out companies as a liaison if they need to bring me in. But as an in-ring performer, I think it's slowly starting to wind down. I still want this match with Ron Von Hess, and if I could win the World Underground Wrestling title, that'd be a great thing, and I'll do my best to be a fighting champion. If all else fails, and you know what, it's been a great road and a great journey in my life, and I'm very blessed to have so many great people that's been part of it.
I will try to put a bug into the ear of the people of Woo America. Would love to have you out here. If my cadence speeds up a little bit when you're covering Von Hess, so be it. But, definitely always glad to have you on Turnbuckle Turmworld. Our pleasure to have you. Thanks to Jerry Bishop for giving a call today and talking to us as well. Would be remiss if I didn't mention NSA Alaska also running today in Palmer, Alaska. So if you're in that area, go watch them. Great product. John, always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Bump safely, and hopefully we'll see you in this area in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, same here. And before we go off air, I want to give a big shout-out to some of Alaska Wrestling. 49th State Wrestling is a great promotion, too, that Jerry Bishop and his lady Freya the Slaya, you know, wrestles at, and they're doing a great job over there, too. I'm going to give them a shout-out for that.
They definitely are. Some of our people headed up there to 49th State Wrestling. And, of course, Wipe Erie, Keep Erie Jones up there, a regular down in this area as well. They're doing great things up there at 49th State and NSA. So Hopefully they'll have a great house tonight. Fans, if you're anywhere near a wrestling show, get out there, support professional wrestling, support your local independents. They definitely appreciate it. We'll be back with you next week. Next Sunday afternoon, next Friday, we are going to have Diamond Dan Garza, someone I've wanted to have on the show for years, finally making that happen. And a week from today, returning to the program, TJ Kemp, one of my favorite people in the wrestling business. So make plans to join us, and we will be back with you next week.